Can I add my welcome to Judith? It's lovely to see you all, particularly if you are a visitor here. A warm welcome to you. My name's Dave, I'm the rector here, and Peter, our curate, is up at All Saints this morning. Wilderness. God blesses us by leading us through the wilderness. That's the title today. And it's a really relevant topic for me, actually, as I have journeyed through my own wilderness in the last few weeks. And I'm going to share a little bit of my story with you this morning. But before I do, I want to ask a question, and that is, what do you think of when I mention the phrase wilderness experience? What comes into your minds? It will mean different things to different people. I'm not particularly talking about this. Good old Bear Grylls. I'm talking about a spiritual wilderness. I think when I reflect on this, there were three particular types of wilderness that I think I have experienced and I think most people probably experience. The first one is what I call an intentional wilderness experience. It's where we choose to go to a wilderness place. Or to take some time out away from the distractions of everyday life, the pressures of this world, to particularly reflect and have an encounter with God. That's what we see happening here in Luke 4. Jesus has just been baptized. He goes straight from his baptism, and there the Spirit, we're told, leads him into the wilderness for 40 days. 40 days of prayer and fasting, of aligning himself with his Father before he starts his ministry. Up to this point, he's done nothing, and he starts by going out into a wilderness time. It's often what we can do when we're about to start new things. Eddie has just been on his stag weekend, 3 days or whatever, and he said to me before he went, he says, actually, we're going on retreat. And I said, where are you going? He says, I've no idea. And I thought, yeah, maybe, we'll see. And by the look of his Twitter and Instagram feeds, he did a little bit of retreating, but has obviously had some fun and watched Manchester United have a great victory at the same time. But he's gone there to prepare for his marriage in just a month's time now. Peter, our curate, in a few weeks' time, will be going off on his priesting retreats, where he'll have 4 days, probably in silence, that's what I had, before he's priested, before he's finally allowed to do the magic hands. But sometimes also, we just go because actually we want to, at a particular time in our lives, just stop and reflect. And a few of us guys had a fantastic morning yesterday morning up at All Saints in the new youth room, as several of the guys from our early morning men's group went off and had a morning retreat. We started with coffee and pastries. Then Kevin led us with a lovely word that God had put on his heart, which opened us up. And then we all went off to different places, some went outside, some went upstairs, some stayed in the youth room to have 45 minutes of just silence, of being with God and seeing what God wanted to share with us. And then we all came back and we individually shared and we prayed for everybody individually and blessed what God had done that morning. And it was amazing to see just what God had spoken to each of us and to see people becoming vulnerable with each other and open to God. And then we went off to Wetherspoons to have a lovely breakfast. But I want to really encourage you, if you're in a life group, that's the first time I've ever done that. Actually, and it was brilliant. Why don't you, with your life group, go and do that? Go and use the youth room at All Saints. I've had permission from Lisa for us adults to use the youth room. And it is a really special place to just go and have a retreat. So sometimes God leads us in an intentional wilderness to go and meet with him. I think sometimes, too, God leads us, we end up in what I describe as a forced wilderness. Those wilderness times which aren't plans, they're not intentional, but where sometimes circumstances mean that we suddenly are stripped of so much around us and we find ourselves in a totally lonely place and exposed. Maybe it's a bereavement that we have that actually just suddenly shakes our whole foundations. Maybe it's a loss of a job or a retirement, that suddenly we're just disorientated. Maybe, as has been some of my journey in the last weeks, it's actually finding yourself in a place of real depression or stress. And in those places of forced wilderness, we can find ourselves alone, scared even, in a vulnerable place, disorientated. It's a place where actually we lose sight of the future. We can't see the way out. But in every direction we look, it appears to be difficult, a challenge, a desert. It's a place of discomfort where we struggle to find our bearings. We struggle to find the way ahead. And you know, those times of forced wilderness can sometimes be places where actually we meet with God really deeply, where we know God really close by us. They can also, I think, be times where actually God feels a long way away and where we feel on our own and God feels very distant, and that can disorientate us even further. I wonder if you can relate to any of that. I know I can. And then thirdly, I want to talk about what I describe as cyclic wilderness, which is really just the waxing and waning of the Christian life. You see, if your experience is anything like mine, actually, the Christian life isn't a nice, steady, horizontal journey of our relationship being constant with God. But actually, it goes up and down and round and round, and actually we find times when God feels really close and times where we're doing exactly the same thing, where God feels really distant. And we can't engage. See, that is what I think the Christian life really is about. Anyone who tells you once you become a Christian, everything's fine and everything is going to be on that level playing field all along, actually, I think is lying. And, you know, I think we see that wilderness experience is a normal part of the Christian life. It happens, I think, to everyone, certainly most people. So don't be discouraged when it does happen to you. You've only got to look at the Psalms in the Bible, haven't you? Here's a couple of them. Psalm 10, verse 1. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Psalm 13, verse 1. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? Who wrote those? David. King David. King David, beloved of God, who God had chosen and anointed. He had those times. Well, here's a modern example. This person wrote, "Where is my faith? Even deep down, right in, there is nothing but emptiness and darkness. My God, how painful is this unknown pain? It pains without ceasing. I have no faith. I dare not utter the words and thoughts that crowd in my heart and make me suffer untold agony. So many unanswered questions live within me. I'm afraid to uncover them because of the blasphemy. If there be God, please forgive me." Any ideas who wrote that? Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, who recent letters have uncovered, we've learned that Mother Teresa basically spent the final decades of her life, 40 years they reckon, in living in a wilderness, feeling an almost complete absence of God. But it's important to clarify that this didn't mean she didn't believe in God. It didn't mean that she had lost her faith, but simply that she didn't feel God's presence. And it's a great testimony to her faith that she kept sacrificially serving for decades, even though she felt nothing. And that was because of the amazing encounter she'd had earlier in her life of just her spiritual disciplines of reading scripture, of prayer, sustain her to keep serving despite not feeling and encountering God. It's quite an example, isn't it? So what can we draw from these things? Well, I think there are three things. And one, firstly, is that being in a wilderness place doesn't mean God isn't there. Just that we can't always experience him. We don't always know him closely. The truth is that we have to hold on to that God is there, even though we don't feel him. That God still journeys with us, even though we don't feel it. Secondly, that being in a wilderness doesn't mean we're a second-rate Christian or that we failed. You see, the greatest biblical characters, nearly all of them, experience wilderness moments. The greatest of those, Elijah. Elijah in 1 Kings 19, after his great success of defeating the prophets of Baal, it says he found himself depressed and afraid and runs for his life into the wilderness. He sat down under a bush and prayed that he might die. Wilderness experiences don't make us second rates, or they don't mean that we're failures. And thirdly, wilderness experiences don't mean that they'll last forever. Those lovely words from Psalm 23. Now, God doesn't just say, I will be with you through the darkest valleys, but he says he will walk with us as we walk through the darkest valleys. And so we don't need to fear. You see, God promises that the wilderness periods will not last forever. For some, that actually might mean they will last till eternity. But actually, or to heaven, but actually they won't last throughout eternity. The last few months, for me, as many of you will know, have been some dark wilderness times. As I have battled with my own depression, which results in me having to take some time off in December. And in the midst of it, I'll be honest with you, it felt really dark at times. And as if I would never emerge. And as I struggled to do the normal, basic things of life, and as I grappled with many of the questions that many of us who have depression grapple with, why me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with my faith? And the added extra one I had to bear of, vicars aren't supposed to go through this, are they? And I felt, as many I suspect feel in these situations, at times I felt a failure. I felt as if I was letting folk down, as if I was letting God down. And in that darkness, I admit that not only did I feel distant from and disconnected from people, but also at times, many times, felt disconnected and distant from God's. As if my spiritual passion had totally drained away. I didn't doubt that God was there. I knew God was there. But like Mother Teresa, I just couldn't feel him. I struggled to pray. I had to rely on others, a lot of it praying for me. And thank you for all of you who prayed for me. I struggled to read my Bible. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, virtually all I could do during that time was to hold on to one verse which God gave me. One verse which reminded me of God's character. Exodus 34 verse 6. The Lord, the gracious and compassionate one, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness. That was what held me in that place. It was well and truly a wilderness time. But the great thing is it didn't last forever. God hadn't abandoned me. And as Psalm 23 promised, God led me through the wilderness. And I'm delighted to say I just feel totally back to normal now. And I've come out actually transformed. And more of that later. There's a line in the morning prayer that we sometimes do, which says this. It says, the night has passed and the day lies open before us. As we rejoice in the gift of this new day, so may the light of your presence, O God, set our hearts on fire with love for you, now and forever. And I read that as we were doing morning prayers up at All Saints a few weeks ago. And as I read it, it just shot out of the page to me. And it was as if God said to me, the night has passed. My dark night of the soul had passed. And actually the day, the brightness of the day lay open before me. And I was able to rejoice and be thankful again in the gift of a new day and of light. And I want to say today, for those who hear, because I know there'll be people here, because people tell me, not yet, you two, not yet. I'll give you the prompt. Those people who are here who are in that dark place, I want to say to you actually that in your wilderness, hold on to this promise that one day in the future you will be able to say the night has passed and the day lies open before us. It's God's promise. The darkness isn't forever. But I want to say too that the wilderness is a dangerous time, a vulnerable time for us as well. Becca Baxter, I told you I was going to get my hedge into a sermon. Here it is. Those of you who've seen the vicarage hedge at the moment will see that it's not in the normal state. A few weeks ago, we realized that most of the hedge had died. So I rang up the diocese, which is what you do when you're in a Dyson house. It's great. And said, can you come and sort the hedge for us? Little did I know this was what it was going to look like. They came in and they took the whole hedge away and dug all the roots out and left the gate. And it looked stupid. And we feel a bit vulnerable and exposed, as if just anyone could come in, and we're waiting for all the dogs from the dog walkers from the common to come in and whatever. But you know, that's what happens in wilderness times, isn't it? Our defenses often get stripped away and we are left exposed. We're left exposed to attack. And that's what happens to Jesus in this passage, isn't it? Jesus was tempted in the wilderness. And when did that temptation come? Well, it came right at the end of the 40 days, when he was most vulnerable, when he was most hungry, just before he stepped into his significant ministry. And how did the devil tempt Jesus? Well, firstly, the devil tried to make him doubt his true identity. Verse 3, it says, if you are the Son of God, sowing seeds of doubt as to who Jesus was. And then he goes on, tempting to him to have his physical needs met. If you are the Son of God, turn this stone into bread. Jesus hadn't eaten for 40 days. The temptation must have been great to meet his physical needs. And then verse 6, tempted him with power and status and to worship things other than God. Says, I will give you all authority and splendor if you'll bow down and worship me. Is that not what can so happen to us in the wilderness times? You know, first of all, I think we're made to doubt our identity. Does God really love me? Can God really use me? Has God really called me? Does God really care? Am I really a child of God? And once our identity is made to doubt our identity, from that I think we can easily be tempted away to seek those things of the world, to seek power, to seek status, to seek our physical and emotional needs. And in doing so, we can be drawn away to worship other things other than God's. You see, the wilderness time is a vulnerable time. In the wilderness times, we can so be tempted to take our eyes off God. Maybe actually that temptation to say, I don't feel God near, so I'm not going to bother with church anymore. Or I read my Bible and I just get nothing out of it, so I'm not going to bother reading my Bible or praying anymore. Or we're tempted to stop trusting God for the way forward, and we look for our security in our money, in our wealth, in our jobs, in our families, whatever. Or perhaps we're tempted to be unfaithful in our relationships. You know, in wilderness times can lead us to be less satisfied in our relationships, can lead our eyes perhaps to wander, to look for satisfaction elsewhere. That's what happens in the midlife crises, doesn't it? So often, time and time again. I wonder if you resonate with that. I wonder if you're honest. Are you being tempted in any of those ways? But I want to say that in the wilderness times, we have a choice, as Jesus did, don't we? You see, we can choose to turn to God and look up to God and look to him, even though we can't feel him holding on to those truths. Or we can choose to turn away from God and go and seek our own desires. You see, in those wilderness places where we're particularly vulnerable, more than ever, we need to stand guard. How did Jesus do it? Well, Jesus knew Scripture. He'd studied Scripture in those good times. He studied it for years so that when he was in that place, he could quote the truth. He could quote Scripture, and that helped him to stand firm. That's what we need to do in the good times, is build that resistance of getting to know our Bibles, to getting to know the truth, to getting into good patterns of prayer. And even in those difficult wilderness places when we feel God is far off, to keep praying those prayers anyway. You know, one of the things I've found really helpful in those times where haven't got the words myself is to go back to words written for me. And that's where actually I found this little book, which many of you have got. And if you haven't got one, I've got a couple more. Go and pick one up free from the welcome desk. But just going to set prayers, set liturgy, which can help us pray in those times when we struggle to pray. And the other thing is actually in those times we need to journey with others, don't we? That's what was lovely about our men's retreat yesterday morning. We were being vulnerable and journeying with each other. Some people who were in wilderness times, in tough times, but we were able to share and pray and encourage and spur one another on. We need each other. But I want to say too, the good news is that wilderness times are transformational times. If they haven't gone out to get the kids, that's my cue. 10 minutes to go before the kids come in, not 10 minutes of sermon, don't worry. Wilderness times are transformational times. You know, often those wilderness times are the most significant times of growth. They are vital times for setting us on God's path. And that's how it was for Jesus. You know, this is my hedge, my new hedge. We've got little sticks there. They're growing. They look stupid, but they're growing. And one day, they will be this high. 3 years' time, I'm told. But isn't that how so often it is in the wilderness times? We have to dig down to dig out the roots of the old thinking, the old ways of life, the old patterns. We have to clear that out. But God doesn't leave it empty. He plants new stuff. New stuff, good stuff, which will grow. And actually, sometimes, though, we have to wait for that new stuff to grow. It doesn't happen. God doesn't give us a nice, fully grown hedge and stick it in. He says, here are the seedlings. Nurture them. Look after them. Water them. And let them grow. And it means that, actually, for a period of time, we will stay in that vulnerable base until, as we are for the next 3 years, until that hedge grows. But the promise is there's new life. And that new hedge will be better than the old hedge. And it will be full of life and not half dead. You know, I know for me, my wilderness time is continuing to bring real transformation in me. And I haven't got time to share that now. I think potentially the next deeper, I may well share some of that story. But I just want to say to you, actually, this wilderness time hasn't just been about me getting into better work-life patterns and changing the way that I do life and my rhythm with family and work and rest and running. But actually, it's also about me growing in my understanding of God's. And in this time, God has stripped away a whole load of stuff from my old ways of thinking. He's taken out some deep roots that have been real grounded in for all my life. And he's planting new seeds and planting new growth. And just even on Wednesday, I went to see my psychotherapist Wednesday afternoon. And she unpacked some stuff with me, really helpful. And then in the Ash Wednesday service on Wednesday evening, I was able to, the joy of sitting in the congregation, and God just met me. And what we've been talking through in the afternoon, he just gave me a deeper picture of his love. And just really unpacked in an amazing way what gone on in that afternoon. You see, this is why God allows us to go through the wilderness times. Because ultimately, if we're open, it will draw us into a deeper relationship with Jesus. You see, the question I've learned to ask is not, why am I going through this? But what, Lord, are you doing in me as I go through this? See, God uses wilderness times to grab our attention. He uses wilderness times to pull up dead roots and plant new life. He uses wilderness times to strengthen us, to deepen our faith, and ultimately to make us more fruitful. He uses wilderness times to demonstrate that he will never leave us. And even though we cannot always feel him, he shows us that he is still there. He's still on our case. He's still beside us, leading us through. And throughout the Bible, we see that God is a transformational God. A God who transforms the desert and ultimately brings life in abundance. A God who ultimately rescues. And I want to finish with the lovely words of this. Oh, here you go. There's my new head. That's what it'll be one day. But I want to finish with the lovely words from Isaiah 35, which God drew me to as I was preparing this. And it says this. The desert will rejoice and flowers will bloom in the wastelands. The desert will sing and shout for joy. It will be as beautiful as the Lebanon mountains and as fertile as the fields of Carmel and Sharon. Everyone will see the Lord's splendor, see his greatness and power, give strength to hands that are tired and to knees that tremble with weakness. And I love this. Tell everyone who is discouraged, be strong and don't be afraid. God is coming to your rescue. It's an amazing promise. And I want to say to anyone here who doesn't yet know God, but actually finds themselves in a desolate place in a wilderness time, that the amazing news is that you are not alone, but that God is there in the midst of it, even though you can't necessarily see him. And if you only turn to him, he will lead you through and bring you into life in abundance. I'd love us to be still. And just invite the transformational God to meet with us. You know, firstly, I'd love to invite everybody to go on an intentional wilderness journey this Lent. One of the things I've done in the last few days is to produce, and hopefully you've picked it up, you've been given it as you've come in, a little Lenten retreat, which goes back to the Rhythms of Grace, which we did a couple of years ago. Use it however it's helpful for you. Do a little bit a day, do it all in one go, just focus on one bit in the whole of Lent, whatever's helpful to you, but just spend some time with God, reflecting and allowing God to meet you in that. Secondly, I also want to just say, to those people who are in a wilderness place now, hold on. Jesus says, hold on to those promises. Hold on to God. Let God and others journey with you. One day you will see the flowers blooming again. And also just maybe a prompt for those of us who know that we are being tempted to go ways that are not God's ways. Just around the communion table, say, come and draw yourself back to God. Come and look up to God again and just follow his ways and just allow him to strengthen you to stand firm where you're being tempted to go a different way. We're going to sing now. And this is, as we sing and then as we lead into communion, this is a time to just continue to allow God to respond. To respond to God, allow God to speak to you. One other thing I should have mentioned too is the Church of England produced some fantastic little booklets which are available on our app and on email as well, called Pilgrim Journeys, 40 Days of Lent Reflections. I've got some hard copies of this that are £2 on the welcome desk out there, or you can download it free on an app or email. They're great ways of just journeying with God in the wilderness of Lent. But I'd love to just invite you now as we sing, just to stay seated. You might like to just pray, but just allow God to speak to you and to respond however he's calling you to respond.